writing pop songs over a watermelon martini. So that was the first introduction.
I really want a watermelon martini now.
I know, right? And they were good too. And they were real good. And that was kind of my introduction to sort of the US co-writing scene. And from there, I sort of went on to write with all sorts of people, because of Fiona, because of others. Jeff Silber, who wrote Wind Beneath My Wings for Bette Midler. Kevin Savigar wrote Forever Young for Rod Stewart, to people that were writing with Christine Milian, Andrew Beluki, who I spoke about before, who had just had a hit with Selena Gomez when I was writing with him, Marius Moga, who had co-writes with Maroon 5 at the time. And so I was writing with all these people that had some really great experience, and that was really... I loved co-writing and fell in love with co-writing when I started doing it, because I think there's one thing to take an idea to the table. There's another thing to get to know everybody in the room through that idea, and then together to sort of collaborate to come up with that and bring that idea to life. And I think I love writing by myself, don't get me wrong, but I think there's a magic that happens in the right writing room with the right people that you can make a song really, really special.
Welcome to Songwriter Trysts. This is an intimate podcast that is connecting songwriters from all over the world. I'm singer-songwriter Ray Lee. Music saved my life, and I love talking with other artists about the power of songwriting and their journey to where they are today. This is a safe space to share stories, lessons, and emotions, all the great things that build an amazing song. Please support the podcast by subscribing, or you can buy us a coffee, all through the website songwritertrysts.com. Welcome to A Songwriter Tryst with Sammy Palinkas. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you, Riley. How are you?
I'm good. I'd like to get you to start by telling us a little bit about who you are and where you come from. Mm-hmm.
No worries. So I'm Sammy. I'm from Melbourne and I'm born and bred here. I started singing at a really young age. I was about 3 years old. And when I was eight, I won a national singing competition that was called the Anastasia Sings Around the World competition on Channel 7 and the 11 a.m. show at the time to celebrate 20th Century Fox's children's movie Anastasia.
That's crazy. And, I loved that movie.
Yeah, I know, me too. So I sang the theme song, the Once Upon a December theme song.
Oh, do you know, I had a diary that when you opened it up, it played that song. And I loved it so much. I actually filled that diary. It was my favourite song. Yeah, loved it.
There you go. Well, yeah, so I won that, and my family and I got to go to Paris. So that was really exciting. And you would have loved it too. I got this like prize pack of all this cool merch. I didn't get the diary though, so I'm kind of devastated by that.
I'll have to find it. I reckon it'll be in a box somewhere in my parents' like cupboard or something.
Yeah.
I'll send you a picture. If I ever do find it, I'll send you a picture. I'll be like, look, there it is. It's like a little purple one. I remember it very, very specific.
Oh, that's really cool. So after that, I went on to do, I actually got into musical theatre and did Annie with Anthony Waller at the Regent. So that was really exciting. And as I grew older and I started doing more music, it was very clear that I wasn't sort of still into musical theatre. I really just wanted to sing. Later in my teens, I got the opportunity to write, and eventually that led me overseas to write in LA, New York, and later Nashville as well. And when I was 21, Fiona Kernaghan actually introduced me to LA.
We were wow.
Yeah, it was pretty cool.
And how did that come about? That sounds like a big story.
Yeah, well, the gentleman that was managing me at the time, I think it would have been about 21, he was doing the bushfire appeal, met Cameron Daddo. Cameron Daddo heard a demo of mine, gave it to Fiona and said, oh, Sammy's got to meet Fiona. Fiona just took me under her wing. We had dinner in Brisbane one night. I think Tanya was there as well. And she said to me, we should go and write pop songs over watermelon martinis at the Beverly Hills Polo Lounge. And then like 8 weeks later, I was on a plane. And that's exactly what we did. So I got to write with all these great, great people over there. She introduced me to some wonderful people. And as I grew up, I guess I just developed a lot more in the pop space with her by my side, and that was really exciting. But as I grew older and the experiences that I had in my life, and I basically grew up, then I sort of started migrating genres because I was just not that sort of bubblegum pop singer anymore. My stories had substance, and I've always really firmly believed that your writing really takes you to where you need to be as an artist and tells you who you are. And so I really listened to that. And fast forward a few years, eventually that led Fiona again introducing me to Rod McCormack. And in the last 12 months, Rod and I have been working together on my album, and it's exactly what my writing became, which was really country. It was really the storytelling that's always attracted me to country. I've always loved the genre. And and here I am.
Let's start at the beginning. What was your influence at 8 years old? That's like, I have an 8-year-old daughter, and I can't imagine that sort of stuff happening at that so young. How did that all come about? Your parents into the arts in some way?
No, not at all. A family friend of my mum's was quite instrumental in introducing us to the dancing world. And I think a lot of that stuff came part and parcel with doing that. You know, I was a competition kid. So I grew up around all the big band, you know, Shirley Bassey, Judy Garland, Eat Your Heart Out. And wow. I think, yeah, it was very different. And the more I got into music, I think the more my taste was shaped, and the more I explored, the more I wanted to know. And I think for me, that was quite a big part of my music, was a huge part of my upbringing because of that. And my taste kind of just spanned from big band to jazz to, you know, pop to, and then eventually also country, probably around the time that like Coyote Ugly came out and Faith Hill brought out There You'll Be, you know, Pearl Harbor, all of those things, the chick with Let It Rip. So I think over time my taste really, really expanded. But they weren't into it at all. It was sort of just by chance that we got introduced. I was always a pretty keen singer. My nan used to actually sit me up on the bench at the doctor's surgery on a day when we went, and I used to sing Home Among the Gum Trees to everybody.
Oh, that's so cute. Wow.
Yeah.
And so you're just like a natural born performer.
Yeah, it's a really weird introduction, actually, now I reflect on it that way. But I think, you know, the more I sang, the more opportunities I was fortunate to receive, and I just worked. I wanted it, and so I worked really, really hard, and the writing and everything just came part and parcel with that, and things just snowballed over time. My family have been really supportive, so that's obviously helped.
It sounds like you've had a very supportive family, because that's awesome. I think when I said I liked music, they're like, okay, but what are you going to do for, like, life? And I was okay. So what you said you really wanted it. What was it that you wanted? What was it that you were chasing?
I think I just fell in. Yeah, I think I always grew up at that age around older people, because I was doing musicals. I did Annie with Anthony Warlow when I was 11, and, you know, the stage show sort of came with that dancing introduction and so forth. And I think I just fell in love with it all. I fell in love with being able to reach an audience, I think, is probably the thing for me that was probably most instrumental. It was less about being known and being on a stage, and more about figuring out that I could reach people by singing at that time, and eventually as I got older, even more so by writing. And that was something that's kind of a really cool realization when you're just sort of starting to get into your teens. And the more I realized that, the more I wanted to do it, and the more I saw the responsiveness of people to that, the more I wanted to give. And I think, you know, especially having taken a bit of a break from the industry for a little while, I think I came to appreciate that even more this time when I came back. I was like, oh, you know, that's that little niggly thing that's been in the back of my mind that I've been missing.
Yeah.
And it's just something that I think is really, really special when you can do that. So that's what really propelled me to want to do more of it.
Yeah, very valuable experience. And to get it so young, it must have an impact on you as a person. Would you, I know you said you had a break from it, what would be your advice for young people, because you were very young, being in the industry and parents of young people in the arts industry, what would you say the pros and cons were? Would you recommend it? Is there any advice that you would give to people around that?
Yeah, that's a good point, actually. I do mentor a lot of younger people coming through, and the thing that I don't know, at times I'm probably still no good at, to be fair, is developing the art of patience, that whole hurry up and wait type thing. I mean, it's really easy to grab hold of an opportunity and to run with it. The question is it the right opportunity for you at the right time? And, you know, having parents and so forth that weren't in the arts, like, we didn't know. We just went, oh, look, a great opportunity, you know, chase the opportunity. And I think I learned a lot and grew a lot from that. And I think there is an element of having to take every opportunity. But I think that there is a period of grace to get to know who you are as an artist and as a writer even, that every person needs to take. And I think enjoying that journey and not sort of being so quick to rush to the finishing line of, right, let's be there tomorrow is really, really important, because in that journey to find yourself, you learn so much more about yourself that eventually shapes who you become as an artist. And that was something that, you know, with the blinkers on, especially at a young age, I didn't appreciate, but this time around I certainly do. Yeah. So I would say to any young artist, you know, if you're getting an opportunity like that to take your career further or to take your passion further, just enjoy every moment of it and learn as much as you can as you go, because you'll look back and you'll go, why didn't I enjoy that more? Because that was part of the process. And I really do think that that shapes your next step and helps you become who you are as both an artist and a writer.
Absolutely. Enjoy the journey, because that's really all everything is, isn't it? So
it is.
What led to the break? How did that happen?
Yeah, sure. So my first break was probably, so I was writing pop in New York and in LA for many, many years. I had an opportunity to go country at a young age, and I think, you know, in your late teens and your early 20s, you're like, oh, is country really that cool? I love country, and country is super cool. But as an artist back then, I was kind of hesitant to go that way. And I had a lot of people pushing me that way, but I was like, no, 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 I want to be the pop singer. I did that for a number of years, and sort of just due to circumstances outside of my control, I did have to take a break, and that was all fine. And my career in my working life took off and ended up in a relationship, and, you know, all of the life things that happened to you at that point started. Mm-hmm. And I had an opportunity to pop out a couple of tracks back in 2016, one that I'd written with Fiona Kernaghan and a couple of others out of LA, and another one I wrote with Andrew Baluki, who had a hit with Round and Round with Selena Gomez and has since gone on to produce for The Weeknd and Post Malone and so forth. So I put that track out as well, saw how it did, and it was just that constant battle of, you know, work and life and music. And I think at that time, just with the work career opportunities I received, I just decided to, you know, propel into that. And I don't think the little niggly thing that sits in the back of your head that says, I love music and I should be doing this, ever really stops. Mm. And in my job, they got wind of me being able to sing, and they got me to sing at a few events, and I had a couple of people saying, you know what, you really should be doing this. You light up when you're on stage, when you're singing to people, like, this is where you deserve to be. And eventually that little niggly voice in the back of my head said, no, 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 you can't just leave this alone. You've really just got to jump in 2 feet and give it a shot while you're still young and you still can. So I think for me that break was actually really important, because I learned some really big life skills that I probably wouldn't know now. I certainly understand more about business, which has really helped me this time around, I think, in understanding that, you know, you've got to be passionate about what you do, and you've got to be able to reach people and to tell your story and make sure that people can relate to that story and can have their own story. But I think it's also good to understand at the end of the day that it is an industry, and it's an industry where, you know, some people somewhere need to make some money. Mm. And having that sort of business sense to come with that this time around has really sort of helped me see things from a number of different perspectives. I think the tricky thing was coming back as a different singer. That was a really big thing for me. And a singer with life experience, I mean, you know, at 21 you write songs about falling in love that, you know, might be replicated with, like, hamburger, you know, you talk about a hamburger because you don't know what love is, and by this time around you've had your heart broken a few times, and, you know, you've had a bit of hardship, and you've been through some stuff, and you've had some hurdles to jump and some challenges, and I think that all sort of has shaped who I've become and part of my growth as an artist.
I don't know if you can be a country singer if you haven't had a broken heart.
I agree with you. I think you have to. And I think you can tell the people that haven't too, because there's like a conviction that, that comes out, you know?
I always was just like, oh, you know, everyone's had a broken heart. But even if you have had a broken heart, sometimes people aren't aware that they have. And, or maybe in denial of it or can't handle it yet or, you know, whatever it is. It is interesting that that emotion and connection to self and attachment and everything, it really does change your what you want to say. So what is your story now that you're back and you're doing your own thing and it's different? And I love how you talked about story and business is very incorporated. So tell us your story.
My story from this side of the journey, or
yeah. So what is your story that you're now going with as a part of your musical business that you want to share?
Yeah, well, I think the last few years, especially for me, probably the last 3 to 4, has been really about sort of personal growth and development and so forth. And it's really funny, when I was young and writing, I was always so afraid to share my story with people. I was like, oh, I can't write this because people will know what I'm talking about. And that to me scared me to death. It was one of the reasons actually I took so long to get writing. And I think in the last few years especially, I've realized that there are so many people that you don't get time to sort of sit back and take stock as a person and really understand your own personal growth and development. And I think just the number of things that sort of led me here, for me, that's been a real big part of those years. So I think in this musical chapter, I think something that I saw an opportunity with is, well, you know, I'm not the girl that goes out drinking and partying and, you know, me writing a drinking song about country would have to be something that was really applicable to me. So I'm not going to go and write about that stuff off the bat because it's not me. But what I have learned is about life and about my own growth and development. And I've learned that that story is so common to such a number of people out there, but no one really talks about it. It's not, you know, there's a whole raft of podcasts available on self-development journeys and so forth and books, but the conversation's not there. So for me, I think it was really important because I wanted to make sure people knew that that self-development journey was okay and that everybody has a story like that, and, you know, no one story is the same as another, but what you're going through is okay, and it's okay to take that time to do the self-discovery. So a lot of the songs that I think I'm writing now is a lot of them about life, a lot of them about that journey. And I really hope that as I put more and more things out, people can really relate to those topics, because I think those sort of life encompassing topics are a conversation starter we should all sort of be having to make it, you know, to make it okay.
Yeah. It absolutely should be okay to be human.
Yeah,
and a part of being human is growing and learning and not necessarily just taking what your teachers or parents as kids has told you as gospel and actually starting to question things. And questioning, I think everything should always be okay, but I come from a scientific background where that's what I was taught was to question everything, which some people don't like. A lot of people don't like, actually.
You know what, I reckon it's because it makes people uncomfortable to think like that. And you know what I mean? Like, curiosity sparks like a lack of comfort in some people. And I think I'm a bit like you. I'm naturally curious, really curious. I ask a lot of questions.
Do you notice it pisses people off though? Like, is that?
I do. Yeah, I have actually.
So I always get shocked. I was like, why? I'm just asking you a question. Why are you angry? Like,
yeah.
What are you hiding? That's what I think. That's what I'm like. What are you hiding from me?
Why won't you tell me?
Yeah. Red flag. Yeah,
massive red flags. And I think that it's just. I think that that self-development journey is something so many people go through it, whether they're aware of it or not. That. I think there is some real merit in sharing those stories and sort of, I guess, making it less uncomfortable for people.
Oh, absolutely. And I love it. How you mentioned that, you know, you can feel very vulnerable and scary. I've definitely been there of like, oh my gosh, I'm putting my naked life and emotional well-being into a song. How am I going to survive this? But you know what? I feel like same with movies, like sometimes we can't talk about a topic, like really intense topic, like child sexual abuse or domestic violence or any of these really important topics, right? But you put a movie about it or you write a song about it and it's an art piece and all of a sudden it enables people to get their walls down and just witness the story and make it, like you said, that little bit less uncomfortable.
Yeah.
I think that, like, that's why I love art. I mean, that's in a nutshell, it's just such a powerful communication tool that gets past those walls that we all have up.
Yeah, I agree.
How did you get past that? Because you said that you felt really uncomfortable. How did you deal with that? What was your development around that?
I think it was more about when I started writing a bit more, especially this time round, like some of the things that I was writing about, like I would share with my friends, which is something that I didn't do much of the first time round. I was so comfortable writing topics where I didn't have to sort of delve too deep in myself to sort of bring something out where it was noticeably me, if that sort of makes sense. And this time around, I shared a few of things with my friends and comments like, oh, you know what? I didn't know you went through that, but I've been through that too. And I totally understand that. You've just made me feel something. And comments to that sort of effect kind of made me think, oh, okay, it's okay to write about this. This is now a safe space for me to be okay with this. And I think that's really helped. Certainly writing with Rod and Sally and Templeton and Sam and some of the other people I've been writing with lately as well, them being so open to hearing those stories and to taking those stories and turning them into something that's really me but also really relatable with me has also been something that's given me a little bit more sort of a confidence thing to go, okay, it's okay for me to share my story. My story is not unusual. And that comes back to that comfort thing we spoke about, you know. If it's uncomfortable for me to share and it's uncomfortable for people, you know, to ask other people about theirs and they're uncomfortable to speak about it, well, you're not sort of going to reach people that way. So I thought, well, if I can put my story out there and my story is not too dissimilar to other people's and they can relate to that, then I've done my job as a songwriter. I don't want to tell someone how they're feeling, but I want them to listen to something I've written and go, you know what? That really resonates with me and that song is memorable for that reason, I guess.
But do you find that you're able to put that out and articulate that better now? And, I mean, I know that I go through an emotional roller coaster, which after talking to other songwriters, I understand that's a normal thing. Like there's a high, you release a song, and then there's a low and it's like it's a fun ride. it's you enjoy the journey though, like you said. How have you managed to kind of navigate that? I mean, and because I've only been doing this a few years, there's no way I would have sung in public at the age of 8, let alone 21 or any of that. So how have you, like, developed the skills to manage those emotions and those roller coaster rides?
There was a couple of things I think when I was younger that kind of helped with that. I mean, when I was doing sort of auditions and stuff as a kid, my dad used to say to me as I was growing up, just remember the brief is a 5'2" blonde that can sing. And he said 150 of you will walk in the room and the director will listen to all of you or the producer will listen to all of you sing and you'll all sing great and you'll all look great and he'll turn around and he'll pick one. And you'll never know what the win criteria is. They'll have a picture in their head and they'll just know. And I think that being brought up with that sort of repeatedly said to me over time, because my parents are really down to earth, you know, they weren't your typical sort of parents in this industry at all. They were really supportive and we just kind of went with the flow a bit. Yeah. I think that really helped keep me really grounded and just sort of depersonalize it a little bit. And I think at that age, as a kid, you know, it's really easy to take some of those, especially knockbacks, because as you would know, there's more knockbacks in this industry at times than there are wins, and you kind of just have to try and ride that wave. And I think it was just the whole sentiment that it's okay to be disappointed about something as long as the next day you pick yourself up and you keep moving forward. Mm. And that is something that I think was drilled into me at a very young age, like have your moment, be disappointed, but tomorrow's a new day. Keep moving. And I think that's really helped me ride that roller coaster as you describe. And I think it's been really important in me in the resilience I've developed because of it and just, you know, the persistence and just going, okay, cool, that didn't work. Let's try again. What are we going to do next time? How are we going to do it differently? What have we learned? how do we keep pressing forward? And that's something that I've done for a very young age. And I think if you spoke to friends of mine and stuff like that, they would tell you I'm quite an upbeat, sort of bubbly personality. You know, I have a 24-hour rebound window, as I call it.
Where, I like that. You know, give yourself a time limit. I'm disappointed for this long and then no longer.
Yeah, I once had someone tell me that they're like, you should feel something for 90 seconds and no longer, you know, sit there, sit with it for 90 seconds and then move on to your next sort of the next lot of feelings that come along. So that was something I learned a lot later in life, but I quite like it because it's like, okay, I can feel disappointed. I'm going to let myself do that and then I'm going to pull myself together and then I'm going to go and do the next best thing. So,
I love that.
Yeah.
After my first first serious boyfriend outside of high school, I got broken up with and I was distraught. And he actually gave me some advice. It was like, you know, you can be sad or you can just choose who you want to be and then like tomorrow morning when you wake up, be that. And as annoying as it was really good advice. And I kind of did just go, well, I just want to be happy. And so I woke up the next morning and I decided to be happy. And sometimes it can be as simple as that and sometimes it can't.
I agree. You know, totally agree with you. Yep.
And I want to make sure I say that because, you know, some things are, you know, a matter of just choice and control and other things are something that you just have to go through the grief process or whatever it is. Like there's that wave of emotions that you just have to ride through. And I say just go with
the flow. I totally agree. And I'm a bit like you. I think I spent so many years trying to control that and then it was kind of like, Sam, what are you doing? Just, you know, pull yourself together, go with it. You just got to go with it to a degree. You just got to kind of feel it and then learn something from it and then try and, you know, find a way forward, I guess, that's what I've tried to live by anyway. Everybody's a bit different in that respect, but yeah, that's what's kind of like tried to keep me on track. And that's in everything in life, really. I've tried to see the good in as many situations as you can, as hard as that is at times.
Absolutely. And life is life. It is what it is. And you just got to, make what you will of it. I love that. It's a really good attitude to have, not just in this industry, but life. So,
yeah.
Outside of like this amazing journey that you've massively had, what is your experience with co-writing and when you're writing a song, do you have like a particular process that you follow? Tell us about that.
Yeah, sure. So I'll start with the first bit. So my experience with co-writing, so my lawyer Paul saw me writing poems in the studio and then started encouraged me to write songs. And I think he was probably one of my first co-writes. And he introduced me to a bunch of other people that I started co-writing with. Eventually Fiona Kernighan, I got introduced to her through a number of people and she was writing in LA at the time and she said, you know, you should come to LA and we should write pop songs over watermelon martinis in the Beverly Hills Hotel whilst people watching. That's literally my introduction to LA. And so I think it was about 8 weeks later, I was on a plane and there we were sitting in the Beverly Hills Hotel writing pop songs over a watermelon martini. That was the first introduction.
I really want a watermelon martini now.
I know, right? And they were good too. And they were real good. And that was kind of my introduction to sort of the US co-writing scene. And from there I sort of went on to write with all sorts of people because of Fiona and because of others. Jeff Silbar, who wrote Wind Beneath My Wings for Bette Midler. Kevin Savigar wrote Forever Young for Rod Stewart, to people that were writing with Christine Milian, Andrew Beluki, who I spoke about before, who had just had a hit with Selena Gomez when I was mm-hmm. I was writing with him, Marius Moga, who had co-writes with Maroon 5 at the time. And so I was writing with all these people that had some really great experience. And that was really, I loved co-writing and fell in love with co-writing when I started doing it, because I think there's one thing to take an idea to the table. There's another thing to get to know everybody in the room through that idea and then together to sort of collaborate to come up with that and bring that idea to life. And I think I love writing by myself, don't get me wrong, but I think there's a magic that happens in the right writing room with the right people that you can make a song really, really special.
Yeah.
So that's kind of my experience with co-writing. As far as where to start, I usually think starting with a good idea is a really good place to begin. I think for the most part, I sort of started out with poems, so I started out more in the lyrical sense. And you know, finding a good idea can be really, really difficult. But when you find it, you can grasp onto something and find something unique about it. I think that's what can make a song really relatable and reachable. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I'd hear a melody or something, and you know, pop something down on, play something on the piano or so forth. Or I've done that a few times, and that works. But for me, I find the things that I write that end up being really relatable just starts with a really, really strong idea.
Yeah, no, I love that, and I think I'm the same. I want to know what the idea and the message and like,
yeah, what's the message?
Yeah, what's the message? But also like, how are you going to tell it? Like, what's the story that's going to tell that? I love that. What would you say your number one advice is when people go into a co-write? What's something you've learned to do?
Yeah, I think, and you know, I check myself on this all the time. Doesn't matter who you're writing with, you've got to contribute. So just bring the idea to the table. Sometimes the simplest idea can be the best thing. And, you know, I'm chronic second guessing with this stuff. I'll walk into a room and go, oh, I'm not sure about that idea. That's probably pretty ordinary. And there are so many times when I've thought that, and then I've put something on the table and someone's gone, you know what, that's really great. And I'm kind of sitting there going, oh, thank goodness I mentioned it.
Yeah.
We may have never written this song.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, I think there is a real, especially when you're starting out and even sometimes when you get into a write with, you know, people that have had a lot more credits and so forth, there is a bit of a sort of gut instinct to sit back a little bit in that write and not contribute as much because your ideas may not be as experienced as other co-writers in the rooms or, you know, or maybe you don't think it's profound enough or whatever that thought is that you have in your head. And I think you just got to put the idea out there and, you know, sometimes it'll be a hit, sometimes it'll be a miss, and you've just got to know that that's not a personal choice. That's just the art of writing a better song, is to gather everybody's contribution and ideas and then find the best possible idea in the room, find the best possible message, a great storyline, and then you're off and racing. So that would probably be my biggest piece of advice to people that are new into a co-writing room.
I think that's great advice. And if you could collaborate with anyone in the world, dead or alive, who would it be and why?
Diane Warren. I was in Nashville.
You're like, I know what she's going to say. And I
No, I didn't actually. It's just my instinctive answer. I love Diane Warren.
Okay.
And it's interesting because she's written a bit of country and also a bit of pops, but a few of this a few of the country songs I fell in love with quite early on were written by Diane Warren. And I just got, you know, as I was singing things as I got older, I didn't even realize, but like I'd pick a song and I'd go and look up the writers because that's something I do quite often. I'm like, oh my gosh, it's Diane Warren again. It was just this like resounding theme, everything I did. And anyway, I was in Nashville last year and Diane Warren's based in LA, and I was staying not far from the Virgin Hotel in Nashville. And in the morning, I actually went over to get a coffee, and she was standing in the line next to me. And it was I don't ever remember being starstruck, but can I tell you, we were having like a chat about the coffee machine, and I have never been so lost for words in my entire life. I had no idea what to say. And she was probably my biggest songwriting idol. Like, really,
Did you say that to her?
Out there. Well, it's funny because I've got some friends in common with her on Facebook, and I messaged her later, and we actually had a whole proper conversation later by Facebook Messenger, which was really cool.
Did you ask her to co-write?
Well, I said to her, she did say to me, she's like, you know, would you ever be up for this? And I was like, absolutely, but I need to get my journey back on track first, and then once I'm there, I'll let you know. But, yeah, she did say that to me in a message, and I would absolutely love to do that one day because that is just that would be a dream come true.
Dude, go.
Yeah,
what are you waiting for?
It's insane. I know. Oh, no, no, I want like a bank to send her, and we're working on that bank because I'm working on an album at the moment. So once I've got the bank, then then I'm going to send it off and we'll see what happens. But I also like writers like Shane McAnally's been amazing. Yeah. You know, Hilary Lindsay, Laurie McKenna, Liz Rose.
Yep, yep.
You know, they just write some really relatable, great songs. The hooks are clever. And I love looking up those songs that those guys are writing and you know, reading the lyrics because lyrically they're always just so good. I'm like, if I could be half that lyricist one day, or songwriter that day, you know, songwriter one day, then I'll be really, really happy.
I love that. I can see how passionate and excited you are about all of this. Like, you just light up when you talk about it. Honestly, that's one of my biggest joys. I love just seeing people in their passion and living their best life. And it's beautiful to see that that's what you're, you know, aiming to do. You even obviously have good fashion sense because we have the same AG, like that denim top that's in all your photos. I was like, I got that too. It's so cute. And they just brought out a white one. Did you see that?
Well, that hit my inbox yesterday morning. And I kid you not, like I was on the phone at 9:01 ringing the store in my local area and I was like, hey, have you got this? Because I am literally, I'm going to be in an hour and I'm going to buy it and it's currently sitting in my wardrobe now.
So. No. Okay, yeah, I'm jealous.
We're about to shoot a new video. We're getting ready to shoot a video for my second single and I've been, you know, the female, I can have this conversation with you because you're a woman. But it's always the ongoing debate about, oh my gosh, what am I going to wear? And I think there's so many people that have commented on that outfit going, oh, my gosh, I love that. Where is it? And I was literally saying to my mum on the weekend because we went for a walk around a shopping centre so I could have a look at what was out there so I could scope and see. So I started strong with the outfit. I've got to keep it going now. And I said to my mum, gosh, I just wish they would bring that out in all of these different colours because I would literally buy every single one of them. And then I'm sitting there yesterday morning and I've like just finished up a co-write and bang, it's in my inbox. I'm like, oh my gosh, someone's heard. I've like manifested this. This is awesome.
I walked past the shop yesterday in the Gold Coast and I was like, yep. But it's white as well. So if you wanted all these different colours, you could probably just dye it. I don't know. Like I would.
That's actually not a bad idea.
But you could. You could just get like five whites.
White ones. Oh gosh, you've given me ideas now. This is dangerous, Riley. That's really dangerous.
But it is. It is. It's such a lovely top. Anyway, I digress.
Thank you.
But my husband's actually my stylist, so he picks most of my outfits. Oh, he picked that top.
That's awesome.
And he also picks all the, he does all the production for this podcast. So he goes through all the applications. And so when he saw the top, he's like, she's in.
Tell him thank you very much. I'm really happy to be here.
I will be.
I mean, it's really interesting though you say that because I was looking when I was sort of working out who I am and especially as I sort of developed out a little bit, I thought, oh, you know, in a country sense, like who are you? You know, you're telling stories, you're doing this, you're doing that.
Yeah.
And I had a look at Shania Twain's early career and some of the moves she makes and, you know, she hired fashion photographers and she was very fashion centric. Yeah, very bold. And I said to Rod McCormack as we've been going through this process, I'm like, you know what? I kind of want to do a Shania thing. Like I want to – there is room for someone to really take the fashion thing by the horns and, like, take that through. And I found that it just gave her an angle that I'm sure was already there as part of her personality that, you know, really sort of helped her propel that part of her career. So when I saw that, like, got the feedback on some of the outfits I've put together and especially worn in some of the clips and stuff like that, I was like, okay, I'm onto something here. I've got to keep going now.
So. You're gorgeous. Flaunt it. Use it. I mean, like, use what God gave you, absolutely. And I'm a big believer in that. I get told I'm, you know, you're too pretty or you're, like, you're isolating women. I'm like, no, like, go for it. Be confident. You are who you are. That's the way God made you. Like, don't, you know, just have fun with it. I've got one more minute left. So is there anything else you would like to share before we finish up? I'm going to put all your links and all sorts of stuff into the description of the podcast as well.
Oh, that's so lovely. Look, it's just I am so grateful to be here and to be back doing this at the level that you know, I'm trying to do. And I just want people to enjoy it. I mean, not everyone's going to like everything. It was put to me a very long time ago, I guess, that, you know, you put music out there, some people are going to love it, some people are going to not like it at all. That's just people's personal preference, personal taste. So I just hope that I'm just looking forward to getting those to know those people that are really into it. And I just really hope I can reach a few people and, you know, sort of bring joy to them in the way that this the passion of both writing and singing bring to me. So
I'm sure you will. Thank you so much. Thanks for joining our songwriter Trist today. To join the family and keep up to date with future podcasts, you can follow us on Facebook, LinkedIn, Instagram, and Twitter. Please leave a review and subscribe. To support the podcast or contact me or our guest, please go to the website songwritertrists.com.